This is Community Conversation, and on the program, we're going to be talking about the next concert for the Adrian Symphony Orchestra that will be coming up in March, on March 13th. Matter of fact, I'd like to welcome into the program the Executive Director of the Adrian Symphony Orchestra, Libby Watson. Libby, welcome back into the program.
Hi, good evening, Dale. Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you with us. And also, the Music Director and Conductor of the ASO, Bruce Kiesling. Bruce, it's so good to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Dale.
We've been having some awesome concerts so far, and here comes another one. And this one's going to be called The Hidden Score. But first, tell us a little bit about when it's going to be and where.
Yeah, we're back. Thanks, Dale. We're back with another classical concert. We've had two Pops concerts since the last one, and we'll be joined by the orchestra on stage on Friday, March 13th. The concert begins at 7:30 at Dawson Auditorium on the Adrian College campus. The evening will begin with a classical conversation by Bruce at 6:40, so you'll want to be sure that you get your tickets for the concert and then plan to come early to hear that talk by Bruce in the auditorium before the concert begins. Tickets are available now online at adriansymphony.org or by phone to call our office at 517-264-3121.
This is called The Hidden Score. And that sounds very mysterious to begin with, Bruce.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about the concert.
Well, this involves one of the real showpieces for orchestra, which is by the English composer Edward Elgar, and it's called Enigma Variations, which is where we get the idea of this title, The Hidden Score, because this idea of the Enigma Variations, obviously the word enigma suggests some sort of a mystery of some kind.
Yeah.
And the piece itself is a series of variations, but the enigma is we don't actually know what tune Elgar was writing a variation too.
Huh.
So it's a series of variations on an unknown theme. Now, he knew what the theme was, but he never told anyone, and he went to his grave. And to his credit, you know, because musicologists today, with the internet, with like X-raying of music, and
yeah,
we dig through everything that these people ever said, ever wrote, ever wrote in a letter, etc., there are very few mysteries anymore.
Yeah,
and if
that's
not,
true.
We're well on our way to figuring most of them out. But I think this may be one of those mysteries we never know, really, what the tune was that he initially had in mind. Some people have suggested it was Happy Birthday or Rule Britannia. You know, he was an Englishman, so he
uh-huh.
would have known all these. He said it was a well-known tune that everybody would know.
Huh.
And so he writes a tune that is a variation on that. So something that is designed to kind of go with it. So you could sing both the tunes together at the same time and they would fit. And then this whole piece then is a series of variations on that initial variation. But we don't know what the very first tune was.
Oh, fascinating.
And I think the most interesting part of it, so I think there are 14 variations, and each one is sort of a musical portrait of one of his friends. So it would be like if you were at a party, you know, and maybe I was sitting at the piano and you'd say, hey, Bruce, do a little variation. What does Libby sound like in music?
Yeah.
And so I would do a little 2 or 3 minute version of, I don't know, Happy Birthday or something.
Yeah.
In the style of Libby Watson, you know, super charming and organized and wonderfully, you know, colorful.
I like that.
Yeah. And then I could do one for Dale. And then I could do one for Larry in the morning here.
Yeah.
You know, each one of you would have a little variation. Well, Elgar did that with the people in his life. So he writes their initials at the beginning of each of the movements. So we know who these people were, whether they were dear friends, maybe professional colleagues. In one case, his dog.
No kidding.
Was included.
Wow.
And then he saves the biggest movement for the end, which is his own variation. So he writes that myself. And in each of those, they're just like really, really charming. And as I said, very, very short. So it really moves by very, very quickly because you get all of these sort of 2 to 3 minute variations. And it's absolutely stunning music. And each one very, very distinct. So some are fast, some are slow, some are happy, some are sad, some are serious, some are very almost humorous.
Yeah.
And the one I talk about with, especially with the dog, there is a triangle going ding, 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 ding. And that is the bell that this dog would wear around its neck. So whenever you'd hear it kind of coming from the other room, you'd hear this little jingle, 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 jingle.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's worked into the music of this. So people usually find this piece incredibly charming because of that. But what I find most striking about it from a compositional standpoint is this 25-minute work, once you total them all up, these various variations.
Yeah.
Yes, the various variations. Once you total them all up, it has this sense of the whole that you really feel like you've experienced one of these great works of music, the same way maybe a Beethoven symphony or Mozart, when you just, you're like, oh my gosh, that was overwhelming as an art aesthetic work. And that is so evident here. And for me, maybe a composer who writes lots of short things that somehow add up to more than the whole is that special spark of inspiration that makes, I think, classical and orchestral music really special as a whole, that you just, you experience it and you're kind of swept up in the whole thing.
Sure.
And just think, wow, this is a true masterwork of the Western canon. And that's what we go to live concerts for, you know, these kind of experiences. So made up of lots of little pieces, but the whole is this magical, sort of mystical something, that extra indefinable quality that makes you feel like you've experienced a great, great musical work.
Yeah. Now, this would be for the whole orchestra. The whole orchestra is going to be in with this, right?
Yeah. So, and it's sort of a showpiece for the orchestra. So every section gets a little something to do in this. So it showcases the cellos in this part, the violins in this part, the winds in this part. And so throughout, by the time you've heard the whole piece, every section of the orchestra has been showcased at various times. And the piece is not known necessarily for being incredibly difficult technically, but for being incredibly moving as a whole. Elgar, we really don't have a ton of music from him. It's not like he wrote 9 symphonies or something.
Right.
But the pieces that have really survived are real gems, to say the least. And one of those, we all know Elgar's music, even though we may not recognize it. But if you've ever been to a graduation for high school, college, or otherwise, if you are familiar with the graduation march, that we all know that. Ya da da da, ya da da, bum 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 da. That's Elgar's music. That's Pomp and Circumstance. And you might not know that that's actually only the circumstance. There is pomp that comes before that. Oh. But we almost never hear the pomp. We only hear circumstance because that's the quiet part. It starts with a big, loud, brassy, and busy part, and then it settles down into that tune, which is meant to be the circumstance. So the circumstance is the graduation theme, but we all recognize that music. And if you've ever seen Fantasia 2000, the film, it uses both parts, both the pomp and the circumstance in that.
Wow.
But that's music of Elgar.
Wow.
So that's the main work, which is the second half of our program, and really will be wonderful. But we have two other pieces, one by Elgar, on the first half of the program as well.
Okay. And then you're also having another, The Merry Wives of Windsor Overture?
Exactly. Because we have kind of an English theme with Sir Edward Elgar and his music, we thought, well, we want to open with something short and charming. So we are starting with music of Nicolai with his overture to The Merry Wives of Windsor. And if you're familiar with Shakespeare's play, Merry Wives of Windsor, it is a ludicrous romp of, you know, this two very smart and conniving women who kind of take advantage of the big oafish man in this story. And so you really capture all of the fun and all of the kind of ridiculous madcap comedy of one of Shakespeare's great plays. This is an overture to an opera version of Merry Wives of Windsor, but the opera actually isn't played very much. We don't, certainly in the West, Western Europe and the United States, we almost never see this opera done. But we do hear the overture played a lot because it's really light. It's very short, very, very charming. It kind of starts with one of those sunrise moments. Like like, come with us now into the story. Here we are in merry old England and we find ourselves on a brisk summer morning. And we have that kind of slow introduction, and then immediately we kind of fall into this almost Disney-like cartoon comedy, a mad romp through all this fun story. So it's something that people really enjoy hearing. And as I said, very, very short. It's a nice short opener and a lot of fun. So we thought that's a lovely way to open this, and it really contrasts the mood with our concerto that follows it.
Yeah. Going to have a special guest?
Exactly, yeah. So we have, you know, we often have pianists and violinists as our guest artists, wonderful players of both instruments. But every once in a while, we like to change it up. And in this case, we're having a cello soloist, which we're really excited about. And it's truly one of the up-and-coming cellists in the world. I mean, this is Sterling Elliott, and he's just a lovely guy and an even better cellist. I've worked with him before, and we're so excited to bring him here to Adrian. He really is just one of those people who play with music on their, you know, on their heart and on their sleeve. Yeah. You really feel every single moment. And playing one of the great works for the cello, and this again is another piece by Edward Elgar, his cello concerto. And oftentimes, you know, when we have pianists or violinists, these are sort of unbelievable displays of virtuosity up and down the keyboard if you're a pianist, and just sort of for the fireworks on the instrument. And there's a little bit of that in this piece, but it's really, as a whole, it's more contemplative, more thoughtful, and maybe a little bit darker and slower in general. Although there are five movements, each one is shorter than our regular concerto movements, so they move along pretty quickly. I think the longest one might be 5 minutes at the most, or maybe even four. But each one has its own distinct character, and really, really beautiful, really, really lovely. The piece opens with these big dramatic chords on the cello. And many people say that if you ask, oh, what's your favorite classical musical instrument, they will often reply and say, oh, it's the cello. Oh. And I always say I'm not surprised because, you know, the cello is the instrument that most reflects accurately the range of the human voice. And so what I mean by that is the lowest notes that a cello can play are the lowest notes that a bass singer would be able to sing.
Right.
And the very highest notes that a cello can play are the very highest notes that your sopranos can sing. So basically, it is the range of the human voice, men to women, that the cello can cover. A violin can play way higher than anybody can sing.
Right.
And a bass instrument, you know, the big double basses, they can play much lower. Obviously, the piano has a much wider range than the human voice. But the cello is pretty much the range of the human voice. And so I often think that when you hear a beautiful melody on the cello, there's something about it that sounds, it's like at home. It's like the sound of your mother. It's the sound of your loved ones.
Yeah.
It's the sound of that dear aunt who was such a, you know, important in your upbringing. Whatever your particular experience is in, I think that a lot of people find something in the sound of the cello that is, it cuts right to their heart emotionally, that feels familiar to them and somehow comforting. And so I think it really speaks to people in a powerful way. And I know that Sterling is going to bring all of that and more.
I was going to say, you know, it sounds like Sterling is going to be able to go and give all those emotions out through his playing.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a really emotional player, which is really what you want on the cello.
Oh, yeah.
Because, again, it can speak with all of this warmth and real drama and depth. And I think anyone who's going to be there is know they are witnessing something really, really special.
Yeah.
Because it does, I find it just, there's something about the cello just cuts right to your heart. You know, like it's speaking to your soul in this way that can sometimes be a little bit jarring. Like, oh my gosh, that was so moving. I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
You know, but we have a really special program for March and we're thrilled to have him and this great program of English or English-inspired music.
I think this is going to be so cool. Libby, I've learned so much in the past few minutes about this concert and about the different information that Bruce just provided. Just think what Bruce is going to be able to tell us in the pre-concert talk.
Right. We've just piqued your interest here, so you got to get your tickets. You can buy them online, adriansymphony.org, or call our office, 517-264-3121. This is all happening Friday, March 13th at 7:30 is when the concert will begin. But come early, like you were saying, Dale, at 6:40 is when Bruce's talk will begin, and that's also held in the auditorium.
Yeah, and if you think this, I mean, I talk here, this is kind of the kernels of information because when I talk beforehand, we usually have visual aids and sometimes some audio where I play parts of the piece and I'll say, oh, this is where this comes from. And it's great to see images of the artists and the soloists.
Yeah,
and
so
we can really know. I like to bring the music to life and remind people that these composers were people. You know, they weren't just like, you know, this music comes down from heaven all perfect, but it was written by people who were like, oh, I hated that part, so I rewrote it or something like that. So they really, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We try to go lots deeper and really bring the music to life in those pre-concert talks.
And you sure do. You know, I've experienced many of them, and you do a great job on that, Bruce. So do you have some thank yous?
Yeah, for sure. We want to thank our title sponsor this season, Plane Wave Instruments or Observable Space. We thank them so much for their continued support. And we also thank the Lenawee Community Foundation for their support this season and the Stubnitz Foundation for underwriting the Guest Artist Fund that brings these excellent guest artists like Sterling Elliott to Adrian for our Lenawee County community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if they want to get tickets, get them now.
Get them now. Again, it's adriansymphony.org is the website or 517-264-3121. The box office will be open on Friday night as well, but If you want that special seat, buy it now.
Yes.
Don't wait.
That's right. Exactly. Libby Watson, Executive Director of the Adrian Symphony Orchestra. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Dale. We'll see you next time.
Absolutely. And Bruce Kiesling, the Music Director and Conductor of the ASO. Thanks so much, my friend, for being here.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
All right. We'll talk again soon. This has been Community Conversation. I'm Dale Gartner. And as I mentioned, we'll talk again soon.